Bernard de Montreal. Preparatory communication number 3. Guilt. Guilt is probably one of man's greatest mistakes. Guilt is probably the greatest trap of the human mind. Its danger is so great and so vast that it affects all men at some point in their lives. No man can say that, in his life, he has not felt guilty. There are people who live lives full of guilt. These lives are so terrible and so dangerous for the evolution of the ego and the development of individuality of that person. Those who benefit from them, those who, because of their moralizing social position, influence beings of great sensibilities, this feeling of guilt delays their evolution and puts in danger. Without realizing it, the evolution of an entire planet, an entire civilization, an entire culture. The greatest danger of guilt is that this phenomenon acts as a chain, and that this phenomenon chains all the egos which are, more or less, affected by it. The reason is this: it is that the ego being alone, the ego not having communication with the planes of light, the ego not being enlightened by an intelligence superior to its own, has no reference point to determine whether an action or another should be taken or should not be taken, in relation to a moral aspect of behavior in any experience. The ego, left to himself, is incapable, unless he is very strong, very individualistic, and even then, to make decisions that run counter to certain established norms in society by tradition, or by those who are in authority and mechanically impose the will for their own evolution. Guilt is based on a fact, a fundamental fact, the only fact worth really studying. And this fact is that of psychological, moral, and philosophical isolation of the ego from society. The ego is unable to sit in judgment before its actions. If its actions must go against a normality established for centuries in a society that behaves mechanically, and where all egos must conform to a lifestyle or a way of life, if the ego is to some extent strong, if it is to some extent individualistic, if he wants to go its own way by himself, he must bear the weight of its action, and often this heavy weight will wear him down. And the emotional hue that the ego will take is the hue of guilt. For the ego not to feel guilty, he is forced to act in relation to the established norms and not to deviate too much from them. So that an action, even if it delays the evolution of the ego, must be committed, directed towards men, for the sake of maintaining the peace of the ego. And egos act in this way by the millions and billions, so that social consciousness prevails over individual consciousness, and we end up at the end of the centuries with political systems, with social systems or cultural systems that impose their will on the ego, and that imprison the ego in a framework that it cannot violate by itself. This situation is very dangerous, because the ego will never dare to violate what he believes within itself, A principle or law that is not actually creative but that is traditionally accepted. The ego, as a result, grows and loses more and more of its will. If he acts for a reason of frustration against the established principle, he suffers with the time of guilt that leads to increasing insecurity. And this insecurity undermines it because it is fundamentally the product of an abnormal way of acting towards men. Guilt is so pernicious that those who suffer from it, to a high degree, eventually lose all ability to face forcefully those around them who take in their lives portions of their lives that do not belong to them, but of which they have control. Because they consciously or unconsciously know that the ego will have to reach out to them and not resist their request. Guilt is a fundamental error, which can only be adjusted in the light of great inner sensitivity or in the light of the intelligence of the voice that speaks within oneself, and which very often forces us to act, and to overcome the limits of our fears about the guilt we have towards others. All egos must respect egos. When the egos are respectable, when the egos are magnanimous, when the egos are just, or when their situation requires reasonable attention. But if an ego feels guilty for not acting in this or that way in relation to another ego, which requires from it an abnormal extension of the gift of self, this ego must realize internally and with strength the right to deny the request that one makes on it, in order to destroy the vampirism which, very often and too often, belongs to those beings who ask others to be served. No man has rights over another man. No man. And I repeat, no man has rights over another man. It's a universal law. All men are equal in the soul. If a man asks another man for something, his request must be carried out by the other by virtue of what he can and wants to do about it. Reasonableness is always required in any action perpetrated by one ego towards another ego. What is no longer reasonable, and which is kept in demand, must be totally challenged and judged on the spot. If somewhere in its life an ego does not do this, does not get used to doing this, to instituting in himself the tribunal of its own solid, intelligent judgment towards an action that is asked of him, and that feels obliged by weakness, by tradition, by emotional bond, to always respond and answer what is asked of him, empties himself and empties himself. And it can continue to empty for years. There are people who have emptied themselves with other beings for years, and who have lost the possibility of emancipating their own lives, of giving their lives joy, of giving their lives happiness, of raising families, of raising children, of living with husbands or wives, because selfish beings were asking for things from them, reaching out their hands and hoping, and almost psychologically or morally forcing these egos to reach out to them and answer their demands. This social injustice, only the ego strongly determined and strongly rooted in a precise judgment based on the internal feeling of its rightness and the balance of reason with the emotion of thought, can do so. Only the solid ego, Only the vigilant ego. Only the balanced ego. Only the ego powerfully seated on its internal consciousness can, over time, destroy his chains and free himself, once and for all, from demands that come from all sides in society, from beings or egos that have a very great facility to ask, but who have a very great inability to give. A naturally generous ego will never impose things on another ego, or a mode of action whose refusal will create guilt in the ego. But an ego, a selfish being, egocentric, self-centered being, who does not have a sense of love, who does not have a sense of real devotion, who does not have magnanimity in him, will always seek to ask another being to reach out to him because society, morality, this famous morality imposes it. This ego will seek all kinds of means, all kinds of emotional means to create in the other a sense of guilt. We will tell him, but your poor mother, but your poor father, but I brought you into the world, I gave you life. What are you doing to me? What are you giving me? And all kinds of formulas filled with a selfish mind. A mind that does not understand life. A spirit that does not know where is situated. In the soul. The reality of the ego. It is not about being tough, it is not about cutting ties, it's not about not giving a helping hand to those who often ask us, either out of weakness or situation, to help them or do something for them. It is a question of knowing for oneself whether a particular action or gesture is required fairly and judiciously in a particular situation. And if such a gesture is not required, if such a gesture is not indicated by the inner science of the ego, the latter should be strong enough to give this gesture an end or a limit, to stop the game of this masquerade that masks the real relationships of one ego with another. When I say that no one being has a right over another, I say so in the context of a very deep awareness of the importance of being as an individual. The relationships that exist or that must exist between two beings must be a balanced relationship. If, unfortunately, because of the social, cultural, moral and moralist values that bind two people, and that force one to impose on the other demands that the other feels obliged to fulfill, the latter almost loses the right to personal freedom. It becomes very important for this man to understand once and for all that he is a free agent in life. That he is in life a being who has the right to say no. And this right to say no is part of his own ability not to reflect in a guilty way on the no that he gives in a situation. If you have the right to say no, if you have the capability to say no, say no. And stop ruminating about the emotional consequences of the no you said. Have the strength to stand next to your no and stop feeling guilty afterwards. Because emotionally you are not perfectly sure of your no. That is where the problem lies. Many people say no, and after saying no, they suffer from it. This is a totally ridiculous situation because the no has already been said. Their social action has already been determined or decisive. If they remain with an aftertaste in the heart or in their thoughts, it is their fault. And alone and by themselves, can they get out of this vicious circle? And to get out of it, they must learn that guilt is an illusion for which they are responsible, that they impose on themselves out of weakness. Any guilt is a weakness. Any weakness leads to a worsening of the general weakness of the being's character. Because a weakness is already a negative in a structure that you would like to be positive. You can't build a house with a fault in the foundation. If there is a flaw, there will be another one and another one. So that the guilt that comes from a weakness still creates guilt, which creates more and more, in the ego, a loss of individuality, and which leads it over the years to no longer be able to use its internal courage, its internal strength. And so, he squanders his own possessions for the benefit of others, eliminates in him the emotional resistance he needs to fight life's events strongly. So that this ego approaches, with time, an age when it would need this strength to reach maturity, and yet it does not have the necessary instruments because already its forces have been squandered. He was for years defeated on his own battleground. Guilt is a lie that you make to yourself. It is a lie that carries two heads, the head of personal weakness and the head of lack of self-understanding. So, lying is always a reflection of what we would like to be but of which we are incapable. And the other aspect, the lack of self-understanding, reflects the lack of personal strength at the psychological level. And this lack of personal strength on the psychological level still reflects the fact that we have been for a very long time vampirized and vampirized by beings to whom we have given the best of ourselves for totally false and illusory reasons. Guilt reflects in man a natural inability to act in a centric way and to be able to control, by himself, the appearance of his actions takes in relation to another ego. This incapacity, this impotence reflects in man the lack of inner knowingness, and causes him, in life, a series of sufferings that he could or could easily have avoided, if he had known himself a little more, and if he had been able to control a little more his emotions, which benefit others but impoverish him. There's no reason to be guilty when you're not guilty. The ego must learn to amplify its sense of personal security when it must say no to a situation or when it must act in a certain way, in order not to suffer needlessly from guilt, but to amplify this inner feeling of strength, of gravity, he must develop, through experience, his centricity. That is, when he considers that an action should be done or committed in a certain way, he must learn not to retreat from his action and not to question it again. When he has learned to not question his actions, the ego will be able to build in him a force, and this force will become greater with time, so that man can no longer suffer from the psychological and moral anxiety of his action. And then he won't be able to suffer any guilt. Guilt must be eliminated from consciousness, because it acts as an acid that reduces more and more the inner strength and submits man to emotional laws that generate in him a weakness and inability to become stronger, bigger, more autonomous. Guilt is a trap created by the illusion of the ego and based on the emotions of the ego by virtue of social attitudes or social principles, which are generally agreed by members of society, because they are part of an often very long tradition, and a tradition that must also evolve. If you suffer from guilt, you will be unable to see completely through your personal situation. You will be powerless to determine the correctness of your character and the power of your inner knowingness. You will be pushed to the left and right by feelings that will initially be false, and from which you will suffer until the day you understand that guilt is a cancer, and that it reduces man to slavery. Man must know internally, must be internally sure of what he is doing. If he does not have this security, this certainty, that is where guilt shows its head. The more man lacks internal knowledge, the more he lacks internal certainty, and I am not talking about psychological certainty. I am talking about internal certainty, this certainty that comes from the depths of the soul. The more man is subject to questioning his actions, and it is for this reason that we see guilt developing and eventually gnawing him, to make his life a map written by external circumstances and not by his own creative hand. There are people in our society, not to mention other societies, who have ruined their lives because they have suffered from misplaced guilt. And where guilt manifests itself most is in the relationships between children and parents, or between parents and children, where there is parental or maternal love, whose actions of experience are sanctioned by traditional patterns, which often no longer have a place in an intelligent society, in a society where consciousness must begin to take hold. Notice that if you suffer guilt because of a social situation, a family situation where moral ties are strong, it is not the fault of the people who are at the origin of your guilt, but it is because of your ignorance that you suffer guilt. It is your own ignorance that leads to your impotence. You cannot blame society, you cannot blame the external conditions of society. Society is a fact, and it is what it is. But if you asked from you things, and you agree to do them because if you don't do them, you feel guilty at that moment, you are responsible for yourselves, before yourselves. And if because you don't have the strength, you suffer from guilt, then it's not the fault of society, but yours. When you have understood, when you have suffered enough guilt, when you have suffered enough from having acted in one way when you should have acted in another, you will gradually begin to understand and strengthen yourself. So that one day, you will be able to act in a very clear way. Always in a situation of balance. Always respecting the rights of others. The real rights of others. But not the distorted rights by a morality that is very often based in these individuals on principles that make them vampires, that make them people who only know how to ask, and that use filial or parental ties to accentuate in the ego victim feelings of guilt that serve them to achieve their purpose. It is up to you to know, it is up to you to dictate the direction of your actions. It is up to you to take control of your life. What others impose on you by the very nature of life's facts, by their own ignorance, is not your problem. If people are weak, it's part of their experience. But just because people are weak doesn't mean you have to be weak too. Guilt is part of evil. Guilt is an evil and a very great evil, because it prevents man from reaching the center of himself. And evil is only when man reaches the center of himself that he no longer has power over him. Evil uses guilt to perpetuate cancerous forms in society, which spread for centuries, generations, and allow it to constantly hinder the evolution of man, which allows it to prevent man from becoming centric, that is, to base its life on its internal feelings based on the forces of the soul. This is why when man has contact with intelligences of high nature and listens to what these intelligences can advise him concerning his actions, he automatically submits to a vibratory law that allows him to generate on the material level, in his physical life, actions that are not colored by emotion, because these intelligences communicate with man on the mental level. And from these communications, man receives real instruction regarding the normal proportions of his actions in everyday life. If man has contact with these intelligences, with this inner voice, which is close to him and seeks to help him, then he can begin to develop the certainty that he needs in actions. Because what it receives as a signal from above is not involved in human emotion. So that this signal can help man, if he follows it, to correct mistakes he has made for years, and to gradually develop a center of strength, until the day when this center is powerful, developed, man can, with all certainty, act in any situation without being able to suffer the slightest nuance of guilt. From that moment on, he is free. He acts precisely. He never looks back. He goes straight ahead. And his life becomes more and more a rapid movement of experiences that enrich him and make his life something special, something very personal. Take care to live your life well, to live it according to the laws of the spirit, and not according to the laws distorted by the involution of the spirit. And then you will be happy and the others close to you will have their true measure.